Welcome to Remarkable Retail Podcast Special 8-Part Summer Series, produced in partnership with Commerce Next. I'm Michael LeBlanc.
And I'm Steve Dennis. This summer, we're mixing up our format to bring you fast-paced interviews with top retail industry leaders, all of whom graced the stage earlier this summer at the Commerce Next Growth Show in New York City.
We'll be back with our regular format and Season 11 on Tuesday, September 2nd. Our guest this week is Lauren Price, Senior Vice President of E-Commerce and Digital Marketing for COS North America. Lauren shares her career journey from luxury e-commerce pioneer to driving growth for the H&M-owned fashion brand and reveals how COS engages Gen Z through authenticity, quality storytelling, and TikTok virality while preparing for the next wave of AI-driven discovery. Lauren also offers timely holiday strategy advice, focusing on agility, rapid data analysis, and making the most of short, high-impact shopping windows like Black Friday. Lauren, welcome to Remarkable Retail Podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Excited to be here.
Well, thanks. I'm very excited. We missed each other. We crossed paths a few times at the show at Commerce Next. And thank you so much for jumping back on the mic a couple of weeks later and talking with me. Steve's on an airplane right now, so I got you all to myself, so to speak. So thanks. Thanks again. Now, an important question is, because I know you travel a fair bit and your headquarters is in Europe, where am I finding you right now?
I am finally back in New York after about 2 weeks on the road. I spent some time in our London office where our headquarters is. So it's always just so kind of invigorating to be at HQ, but also nice to be back home finally too.
Let's jump right in. Tell us a bit about yourself. You've got an interesting background on kind of both sides of the table, so to speak, both retail and analyst and other stuff. But tell us who you are, how you got to be you, and what you do for a living.
Sure. So I've been in the e-commerce and kind of digital space more broadly in some capacity for almost 20 years now, really my whole career. And, you know, I think as you observed, being in the industry that long, just the types of roles have really evolved. The companies themselves have changed along the way. And so, you know, my career path doesn't exactly kind of have this straight line. It wasn't just kind of up through an e-com org, let's say. But that's the fun of it too. So I kind of got my start really at a firm called Create the Group, and it's, you know, no longer kind of present today, but it was such an amazing company to kind of start out in e-com. And we were creating the first e-com sites for luxury and fashion brands, just, you know, the kind of best names in the business. And this was when, you know, no one was sure that people would even want to buy a luxury item online, or, you know, a $500 dress even online. So,
or if the luxury brands even wanted to be there,
maybe they didn't even want to be. There's a lot of sort of hesitation there. So, you know, just looking back now, it was kind of this really special moment in, you know, even in sort of the history of e-com. So just incredible to kind of be a part of that. And also, you know, our clients didn't have in-house teams doing kind of all the functions that you would today. And so that allowed me to get this really kind of 360 exposure to every part of what it takes to design, build, launch, and run a website, because we were kind of doing everything for them. You know, everything from, you kind of suddenly I'd be on set at an e-com shoot figuring out how to do that, or suddenly I'd be at a call center figuring out how to kind of train them. So, you know, it was a bit of the Wild West, but also what just, I think, led to such a great foundation. And then I went from there down a little bit more of a kind of strategy and consulting path. So working at places like Demandware, which became Salesforce Commerce Cloud, and advising retail clients there. Did a stint at a startup, Lyst in London. And then I joined L2, Scott Galloway's retail consulting firm, that then got merged into Gartner. So as you can see, a lot of the kind of mergers and acquisitions along the way.
He talked so glowingly about that for him.
Again, just like such a special place and time, just an amazing group of colleagues that I'm still so close to and really kind of value today. And that was just such an incredible roster of clients that I got to work with there, and just having that exposure to, you know, their C-suite and their boards, and just really being a very strategic partner. it's actually what led to my first brand side role at J. Crew, J. Crew Group. And I was working closely with their CMO, Derek Yarbrough, when I was at L2. And Derek and his team are amazing. And I got to know them quite well. And then, you know, just was really fortunate that he asked me to come join them in-house. And so that's how I made that leap kind of over to the brand side. And finally had to, you know, kind of practice what I preach. It's easy to tell everyone what they should be doing.
I've been telling everybody about this. Eventually somebody gives you the chance to go, you know, put all those words into action, right? Well, you already have that experience. So
not in quite that context. And, you know, honestly, to have your first brand be a brand that's as big and iconic at J. Crew was just really...
Yeah, you didn't just start off small. You didn't.
That was slightly ambitious. Intimidating, but also really just an honor too. And I, you know, just quickly learned so much. It was very immersive, and you know, suddenly you get that look behind the scenes, and you're like, now I understand why this thing that I was, you know, preaching to brands. This is so simple. Of course, we need to, you know, do XYZ, and you understand how complex it is to make it happen. Yeah,
fantastic. And then you moved to a European retailer. Talk about that.
So that led me to where I am today at COS, which is part of H&M Group, but the brand is going to be based out of London. And I lead marketing, digital marketing and e-commerce for North America. So what I think really excited me about the move to COS was that it is a global brand. Mm-hmm. And it's also still smaller in kind of North America than it is in many other regions abroad. So it's kind of this perfect balance of, you know, having the resources and the kind of structure of a big global company, but then being in a smaller kind of growth region and really getting to kind of be a part of driving that kind of growth path in North America.
Amazing. Now, as you say, there's not, very few people listening wouldn't know the name COS or the brand. Mm-hmm. Tell us about scope and scale and in North America and around the world. And what is, you know, it's a busy, crowded, fast moving sector. What makes COS remarkable?
Yeah. So, I mean, at the core, I mean, we are a fashion and accessories brand, and we have both women's wear and men's wear. You know, I think what makes us special, we're really known for our exceptional quality and, you know, a refined aesthetic. It's, you know, pieces that are part of your wardrobe for years that are very versatile. But there's always kind of a design detail that makes a COS piece special and, you know, kind of beyond just a wardrobe basic. And, you know, our price is really fair for the quality and the craftsmanship. It's very much in line or better than, you know, I think many higher priced brands. So it's a kind of unique space to occupy, which at times also kind of makes it a challenging, but interesting to be in this kind of consumer facing side of the business where you're trying to really kind of communicate that and sort of strike this balance in, you know, where you're sort of positioned above a lot of specialty retail, but below luxury. So again, part of the kind of interesting challenge that brought me here. But more broadly, I mean, we're so headquartered out of London, as I mentioned. Our first store opened in 2007. We have 239 stores today, as well as e-com, of course. We're in 48 markets around the world, and I'd say the largest in Europe, followed by APAC, and then North America being kind of the big growth opportunity.
Now, when I think of your stores, I think of a mix, let's see if I get this right, of standalone locations like in Soho, but also in some A-class malls. Have I got that about right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely a combination of both. And, you know, I think it's always helpful to be in that mall context and, you know, kind of have that customer there that's really kind of intending to shop. But I love the visibility that we get from, you know, our retail storefronts where you can kind of walk by and drive by and, you know, anything to help us drive that overall awareness.
Fantastic. Now let's get to the growth show at the Commerce Next Growth Show. We missed each other, but you did not miss being on the stage actually with one of our guests a little earlier in the season, Sarah Henry from Walmart. You're on a panel from Gen Z to Alpha, redefining acquisition for emerging audiences. Talk about a little bit about the insights you shared in the panel and a couple of takeaways that you hope the audience walked out of the door with.
Yeah, it was really fun. I loved getting to chat with, you know, just super sharp peers like Sarah and also Jess Azella from Reformation, a brand that I really admire. You know, we were talking about, of course, kind of this younger consumer, though not, you know, not as young as they used to be. And that, you know, young often kind of correlates just on the whole to a lower household income, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they won't spend sort of disproportionately on fashion. I mean, sure. I certainly did when right. I was the age they are today.
Or without something, not sacrificing other things, right?
Exactly, I mean, exactly. Right? You know, it's, you can be a little less responsible, if you will, but
a little more discretionary.
Right. We live in a discretionary world. So, you know, it's, but what we find for our Gen Z customer, I mean, they're very savvy and informed when it comes to fashion. And, you know, I would say even more so than, you know, a kind of millennial consumer like I was. At the time, I mean, there's so many resources that they have. And so they will spend up if they believe there's a good reason to do so. And so for costs, I mean, we're not, as I mentioned, the most affordable product in the market, but we have really great quality. And I think that's really helped us kind of stand out and be essentially the reason for a savvy fashion consumer to choose us. We had this amazing kind of acquisition moment that began about a year ago with this clean cut t-shirt. It's kind of our sort of core short sleeve, sort of heavyweight refined t-shirt. And it became our top new customer acquisition style. It's $45, which is at kind of the lower end of our assortment, but you know, you can certainly find t-shirts for less money out there. Sure, so sure. It was really started going viral because of this creator on TikTok that posted a video doing a very sort of in-depth breakdown of our tea versus Uniqlo tea that was $15. And, you know, we took note quickly. And what was so interesting about this video is it wasn't the typical kind of style inspiration content that we were used to seeing around our brand. But she got really into the details of the construction and, you know, the stitching and the kind of fabric and the overall value of it, and concluded that, you know, even though the cost tea was more expensive, it was a better value. Yeah.
And this influencer wasn't one of your, I don't know if I call them roster, but one of your influencers. This is just a random occurrence in the world of these things, right?
Exactly. And, you know, we really have to kind of keep, you know, our finger on the pulse, because that can come up and you want to kind of get, you know, the most momentum out of that. So what we did, you know, as marketers to try to kind of maximize that, and actually even just before we did, other creators on TikTok then kind of started making their own reviews. They said, well, I got the cost clean cut t-shirt. Here's kind of my take on it. Mm. And so then off the back of that kind of organic virality, our marketing team started a gifting campaign with our partner ShopMy, just focused really on that shirt. And it became one of our top performing campaigns as far as, you know, views and clicks and revenue. And so I think the kind of takeaway for us there was just, especially as a smaller brand in the market, really seizing quickly on those moments of organic momentum and trying to kind of amplify that as much as you can.
We'll be right back with Lauren Price, SVP of e-commerce and digital marketing for Cause North America, right after these messages. Promotional support for the Remarkable Retail podcast is provided by Crave Retail. What's retail's biggest blind spot? The fitting room. A shopper wants to buy, but can't get the help they need. That's why global brands partner with Crave Retail, the market leader in smart fitting rooms. Crave connects that moment to your business, giving shoppers a voice, associates real-time alerts, and teams the data to buy smarter. The result? Higher conversion, better decisions, a seamless experience. Learn how fast you can elevate your fitting rooms at craveretail.com. If the world has changed so very, very much, why have so many organizations changed so little? As the pace of disruption accelerates, leaders need the courage and the insight to aim higher in the value they deliver, move faster than they ever have before, and take the bold action to leap ahead of the competition. With Leaders Leap, Transforming Your Company at the Speed of Disruption, Steve's latest breakthrough bestseller, you'll discover why so many companies fall into the trap of the timid transformation. More than anything, you'll learn about the essential mind leaps leaders need to make to win the future. Leader's Leap is available just about everywhere books are sold, as well as on Audible and as an ebook on Kindle for just $9.99. Promotional support for the show comes from Find Mine. Why choose between brand storytelling and driving business results when Find Mine delivers both? Find Mine's innovative enterprise platform generates breakthrough customer experiences for top brands like Lululemon and Ann Taylor. And this fall, Find Mine's democratizing the magic with a new GPT-style system for marketers, merchandisers, and product managers that adds improved features to your customer journey without enterprise contracts or getting stuck in product development backlogs. To get a jump on the competition, join the waitlist today at findmine.com/remarkableretail.
It also really taught us, I think, something important about the type of content that we were kind of going to market with and what was resonating with our consumers, particularly younger consumers. Mm. It kind of prompted us to create this more, this content on our own channels that was speaking more to quality and kind of the craftsmanship of our products. And, you know, sort of pushing ourselves beyond just more sort of beautiful campaign imagery, but having a more kind of authentic dialogue. And I think you could argue that we even have a responsibility to kind of educate our consumers on, you know, what makes our product special and unique. And that was especially helping us resonate and win over Gen Z.
Do you and the team think about or worry about, I don't know what the right phrase is, about being, you know, when this organic kind of activity happens on social media, that you don't want to be inauthentic or seen as kind of taking advantage of an opportunity other than, you know, amplifying the opportunity. Mm-hmm. You kind of walk that fine line. It's like, you know, you at the one hand want it to be genuine, but if you go too far, then it feels less genuine. Do you kind of walk that line, or how do you think about
that?
Yeah,
I think that's a fair point. And I think, you know, we all have probably seen examples where something's kind of gone too far. But, you know, in our case, we took the approach of gifting influencers. And so, you know, the kind of distinction there is they're not required to post. You know, there wasn't kind of an explicit exchange there, but we just had such belief in this product and, you know, the momentum around it, that by kind of getting it in the right hands of people that were, you know, had great aesthetic and great following, but were genuinely kind of fans of ours, I think it still kind of kept us in the more authentic lane, while still helping kind of speed up and amplify that overall visibility.
Fantastic. Now, let's talk about the newest development in your world and everyone's world. It was certainly one of the buzzes at Commerce Next, which is this GEO, this generative engine optimization, this next thing where we're all trying to figure out how to optimize for AI versus, I remember you and I've been doing e-commerce for a similar amount of time. I remember trying to figure out Google in the early days of marketing. Now it seems we all have to recalibrate for this AI. What are your early thoughts about that? How much time and treasure are you thinking about committing to just even figuring it out at this point versus activating? Or maybe you're down the path. Maybe you're already restructuring. How are you thinking about it, you and the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the short answer is it does deserve a lot of thought. And increasing effort, especially when it comes to the more strategic roles on your team, or, you know, my role as a leader, but still also keeping kind of adequate resources allocated to where your traffic is really coming in today too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when we kind of talk about that sort of 20-year history of e-com, I mean, I think AI search is going to scale much more quickly. You know, that kind of eclipsing is going to happen faster than, say, mobile versus desktop usage, or, you know, e-com versus store, even in kind of the last 15, 20 years. Like, those are obviously big shifts that happened. They weren't that as fast as I think kind of this AI search adoption will occur. So, you know, retailers very much need to be in a stage right now where they're taking steps to test tactics and solutions, you know, maybe first to enrich their product catalog, to be ready for AI-driven discovery. You know, you want to think through kind of all the data sources that you have, maybe even outside of your product catalog that you can leverage, even if it's unstructured, that add more context and more relevance. So kind of taking stock of where you are today, what you have, and how you can start kind of optimizing your data and your catalog so that as that shift happens and speeds up, you know, you're kind of as positioned as you can. But I think, you know, for us as a fashion brand, we're probably, you know, we're very visual. We're, the brand element is very important. I think that kind of maybe like the adoption curve for luxury and e-com, this isn't the category that's probably going to be the early mover for agentic commerce. It's still a category that, you know, people love to shop. It's fun to shop for fashion. So it's not necessarily what you want to outsource first, but still that kind of assistance in kind of the discovery and the comparison is the piece that I think consumers are going to kind of increasingly move towards that are relevant to us. So, you know, I think ideally these efforts also aren't separate from what you need to do to drive your traffic through kind of what's called traditional search right now. So, you know, the partners that we find the most valuable to be working with here understand that we have to do that kind of twofold approach right now. And so the best case scenario is that, you know, the feed enrichment and the feed optimization that we're doing today for kind of our current search traffic also can sort of dovetail and combine with the efforts that we need to do to kind of get prepared for AI search. So, you know, and we're a small team, we're able to essentially try to do kind of the near term and the longer term optimization as much as we can in parallel.
That's a great approach. Last question for you as we turn our minds to the rest of the year, holiday season, you know, Black Friday. What's your advice to your fellow retailers about winning the day? It's going to be, Black Friday is going to be here before we know it.
I know. I mean,
we're talking in July, but I'm sure many people listening, yourself, you're already doing the planning for holiday. What's top of mind for you, and what's the team working on? What's your advice?
Totally. The Black Friday period, what always kind of gets me here is just how short and concentrated a period of time it is. And so, you know, we're approaching it now. And I think for this period of time right now, it's important to use this time, which, you know, especially for fashion brands, it's a little bit of like a kind of quiet period. You know, you're sort of wrapping up your summer sale. You're not, people aren't quite ready to kind of engage with fall yet. So it's actually a great time to run a lot of just smaller sort of segmented tests to really kind of hone messaging, promo structure, communication on site, just finding all those little optimizations to kind of make that Black Friday execution as strong as it can be. But, you know, despite all of our best laid plans, nothing's ever as smooth as you hope. And so what I think really helped drive success for us last year was my team being really nimble with our analysis so that we were able to make kind of pivots quickly in our messaging. And so I think when, you know, you only have a handful of days to drive the volume that you need to drive, it's about not just having your kind of promo plan B, promo plan C scenario in place, but actually focusing more on each member of your team having a really clear kind of analysis playbook ready. So you're trying to kind of shortcut that diagnosis phase as quickly as possible. As soon as your promo kind of hits the market, how quickly can you read how it's, you know, how consumers are responding to it, how they're engaging. And then, you know, the plan B maybe isn't just to change the promo itself. We're actually causes very restrained in our discounting. So it's not really an option to make the promo deeper. What we had to do is be able to kind of quickly assess, you know, where there might be an opportunity to take a precise action, whether it's addressing, is it, you know, traffic, is it AOV, conversion, where in the conversion funnel. There's so many options. So having that ability to just do that analysis really quickly and precisely and find the right action to take is probably as important as preparing, you know, the kind of promo backup plan in and of itself.
Well, it's great advice from a brand, and with your experience, it's really a great asset to our listeners. So, listen, thanks so much for joining us on the Remarkable Retail Podcast. Real treat to meet you next time. I think I saw you on stage, but we didn't get a chance to meet next time.
Yes, we'll
have to do it for sure. And I wish you and the team a fantastic rest of the year. It sounds like you're getting ready with lots of agility and planning in the quieter time, but getting ready for what will soon be upon us all. So thanks again, Lauren, for joining us.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here.
Thanks for listening. Please don't forget to give us that 5-star rating and review wherever you enjoy your podcast.
And be sure to subscribe and check out our latest retail store tour videos on the Remarkable Retail Podcast YouTube channel.